Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. We have another awesome show for you. We have two guests today. Our first guest is an author, a journalist, and a filmmaker. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with our friend from Australia, John Pilger. John Pilger, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. It's very good to be back on the show.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, and my listeners are very excited that you're going to be on again. You're held in great esteem with the people that I associate with here in the United States, so it's an honor to have you back on.
Well, thank you.
Well, you produced one of the best documentaries on what's going on in Venezuela and also in Latin America called The War on Democracy. So I've had people talk about what's really happening in Venezuela, what's really happening in the Ukraine and Crimea, and I wanted you to compare and contrast what's happening, you know, especially with the U.S.'s role and response to these issues in these countries.
Mm. Well, in many ways, Cindy, it's an old story. There are important events happening in the world, and where we've been told one version, which in many cases is the diametric opposite of the truth. That's, as I say, the way our system, our particular system of propaganda, works. What happened in Ukraine, that there was a putsch, a coup led by right-wing elements, many of them fascist, with roots that go back to the Second World War and back to the 30s. And the prime mover to this coup of getting rid of, however odious he might have been, but a democratically elected president in Ukraine, the prime mover to this was the United States. The United States has been running a system of so-called color revolutions around the world for some years now, and especially in Eastern Europe, what it has done in the former parts of the Soviet Union is provide, let's say, catalysts for elites to take over in those countries. Now, in some of them, they may be representative of certain factions, but in almost all of them, they're deeply undemocratic and reactionary movements in all these countries. And the same thing happened in Ukraine. Everyone is a complicated, separate situation. But the system is not that complicated. The U.S., when the Soviet Union collapsed, the U.S. tried to run, and did successfully up to a point, a similar color revolution in the Soviet Union and during the Yeltsin regime. So the propaganda then said it was okay for Mr. Yeltsin to send tanks against the elected parliament in Moscow. but it's certainly not okay for a referendum to be held in Russian Crimea. Now, the complexity of that has to be understood, but it's very simple. The Russians, the Soviet Union, gave away undemocratically the Crimea to its then state within the Soviet Union, the Ukraine, in 1954. That shouldn't have happened.
Right.
A referendum has now been held by in a part of the Ukraine that has been traditionally Russia, and that referendum has produced a 90% yes vote to become part of Russia. The propaganda describes that as a Russian invasion of Ukraine, and the propaganda exists at a very high level. The New York Times, most of the U.S. media, in fact, have gone along with the cartoon image of the voracious Russian bear, once again proving that it is the Cold War enemy that it was always presented as for so many years. That's not working, of course, because we have so many more lines of information now, such as your program and the internet, and we have other sources now. But it is interesting to see the Cold War in terms of its propaganda return. The same is true in Venezuela. What has happened in Venezuela is there has been yet again an attempt to overthrow the elected government. The opposition in the parliamentary opposition in Venezuela is defeated. It's in disarray. It didn't lose the election by all that much last time when it faced Hugo Chavez's successor, Maduro. But it is in disarray. So in order to make up for that disarray, it has sent its people into the streets. That has been presented in the United States and in other countries as a country in turmoil, as the government attacking the people, and so on and so forth. We saw that with the U.S.-backed coup against Chavez in 2002. It's just adding, we see Seymour Hersh has just published a very important article in the London Review of Books. One of his very authoritative investigative reports, which leaves us in little doubt that the chemical weapons attack, the sarin attack, that caused, that almost brought the United States to the brink of attacking Syria,
right,
was not the product of the Assad regime, but in fact originated in Turkey. Now I mention that because, first of all, it's very important, and that it replicates the false flag of the Iraq invasion in 2003. But the propaganda in the United States has been to ignore, willfully to ignore, the Hirsch revelations. As I understand it, nothing has appeared, at least up to last night, in the Washington Post, New York Times, all those so-called respectable organs of journalism in the United States, on something that tells us a great deal about how the Obama administration conducts its so-called foreign policy, and that is conducts it on the basis of deception, disinformation, and really a kind of institutionalized deceit. So coming back to your original question, I mean, what we have is the United States really trying to resume or reinforce the role it sees itself as dominant in the world. It has effectively ringed the Russian Federation with hostile, if not hostile countries, certainly with arms, with missiles. It is it is forever threatening, there is forever a war on the horizon, and the objective is to undermine and hopefully destroy the Russian Federation. The long-term strategy is known as the China pivot. It is getting rid of the power, the rival in the world that the United States sees as the most serious, the most worrying, and that is China. And President Obama has called his policy China, the China pivot, pivot to China, so that by 2020, two-thirds of all U.S. naval forces will have been transferred to the Asia-Pacific. And the confrontation will be conducted through Japan, the very conservative government in Japan, through Korea, and in the arc that is that covers the great industrial heartland of southern China. So this is it. It's taking microcosms and describing them as great strategies, but I have to say I sometimes wonder if any of these people in the White House really do think in terms of great strategies or do intellectualize it. But there's no question that every move the U.S. makes is about dominance.
Right.
And it has two opponents, two principal opponents in the world. One is the Russian Federation, the other is China.
Right. Well, and also Venezuela, especially the one of the last times I was in Venezuela, they were really trying to build up relations between not just Venezuela, but you know, Alba and China as trade partners and, you know, to build alliances. And so is you're saying that that's one of the reasons that what's happening in Venezuela is happening?
Yes. Yes. I mean, China has made quite extraordinary inroads across the world in an economic sense.
Right.
It's not interested in conquering the world with its dominating the world with arms and armaments and armies. China has become a very successful trading partner of many countries in the two great continents that the United States now regards as, quote, neglected, one of which it used to dominate, and that is Latin America. The other one is Africa.
Right.
In Latin America, the United States, of course, regarded this as its backyard. A great deal has changed in recent years, principally as a result of the rise of governments like that led by the late Hugo Chavez and Correa in Ecuador and Kirchner in Argentina and in Brazil and the first indigenous government in Bolivia and so on. There's been huge changes in Latin America that hasn't seen the United States out the door, but it has, there have been historic structural changes, such as the banishment, the effective banishment of the IMF from the continent of Latin America. At the center of this is Venezuela. There's no doubt that the influence of Chavez and of the what he represented and what his government has represented and the influence that is that it has had throughout the continent is seen as the most important challenge to the United States in a continent that is, that it traditionally is dominated. So we should watch very closely what is happening in Venezuela.
Yes.
You mentioned China has certainly China and other countries, but China, which is brought, is now the second or third major industrial and economic power of the world, has brought it brought infrastructure to much of Latin America, also across to Africa. I mean, what has been ignored has been an effective U.S. invasion of Africa since NATO attacked Libya and overthrew the Gaddafi government, which served as a kind of gateway to Africa, a buffer against Western scramble for the resources of Africa. The United States now has a military presence in the great majority of African countries. An effective invasion, not with arms, although arms are present, but with bribes. The United States' main power, of course, is always bribery. And the number of regimes now, which are heavily influenced by U.S. policies in Africa, is unprecedented. And this invasion of Africa has everything to do with meeting what they say in the White House, what they say in the State Department, as the Chinese challenge. Because throughout Africa, China has built factories, it's built roads, it's built bridges, it's done deals with governments. Its influence is very, very considerable. And the U.S. sees that as a challenge to its hegemony. So we're seeing right across the world both a new Cold War, The old Cold War was never fought, thankfully, between the Soviet Union and the United States.
Right.
And it was mainly in a rhetorical standoff. But the real Cold War was fought in poor countries by the United States. It was fought in Latin America. It was fought in Southern Africa with the United States and its proxies and its allies overthrowing governments one after the other. That was never acknowledged as the essence of the old Cold War. It was always seen as the U.S. versus the Soviet Union, to some degree China, Red China. It wasn't. It was the U.S. It was U.S. conquest against poor and often defenseless, but very often resource-rich countries in the poor world. So we're seeing that happening again. We're seeing that happening again. We're seeing a new Cold War happening again.
Well, Afghanistan was seemed to be a proxy war between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And just look at the consequences that we're still paying for that.
Well, yes. Afghanistan was where it is claimed, anyway, that the beginning of the disintegration of the Soviet Union happened. The Soviet Union, believing that it had in its southeastern part of its internal empire, which it had, believed that there was an Islamic influence that emanated from Afghanistan, invaded Afghanistan in 1979, which provided the U.S. with the opportunity to undermine the whole Soviet Union itself. And 10 years of war in Afghanistan and facing a jihadist enemy, then known as the Mujahideen, armed and bankrolled and logistics supplied by the United States really had a devastating effect on the Soviet Union. It also produced extreme jihadism. It
right.
produced Al-Qaeda, and it led to 9/11. So it, Cindy, it comes down to two words, independence and dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Countries are singled out for if they wish to go an independent way. It doesn't matter, really, if they are Islamic countries or if they're countries with another ideology, if they are countries, Western countries. I'm speaking to you from Australia, where in 1975, a reformist government was overthrown in a constitutional coup with the assistance of the CIA.
Yes.
And so it doesn't matter what you don't, what countries, the lesson for countries is that, yes, you can be independent, as long as that independence, you can be independent, as long as that independence complies with the policies of the United States. That is a cast iron rule. And countries that break that and go their own way, then face great difficulty. And that's still true today, as it's always been.
John Pilger, you just wrote a great article about that that's posted at your website, the CIA involvement in that part of your country's history. And I will link that when I make my newsletter. I want to be respectful of your time, and I want you to tell my listeners about your newest movie, as briefly as you want to do it. And it's called Utopia, and it's about your Australia's story that's like not just unique to Australia. Many nations treat their first peoples pitifully, and you've been to the United States with this issue, the way we treat our first peoples, and so your new movie Utopia again addresses this issue.
Well, yes, I mean, there is, again, all colonial countries, all colonized countries, as Australia is, the United States is,
mm-hmm.
North America is, and Latin America is, and Africa is, are colonized countries. That's why I've always felt that it's impossible to understand, let's say, the broad canvas of the world, to make sense of the world, unless you frame it in the colonial experience and understand how how imperial power works, because it affects us all. It affects all countries. In this country, as in the United States, the people who suffered most when Australia was colonized by the British were the indigenous people, the Aboriginal people. Australia is quite unique, because what happened here was the greatest appropriation of land in world history. This is a massive country, slightly bigger than the United States. And the British simply took it. The native people, the first people, ceded none of it, and they fought back. And when I say unique is that very little of these, of this resistance, of the slaughter and of the bloody appropriation of this country is recognized here for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's understood as there was a massacre here and there and so on, but the pattern of it and the sheer scale of the resistance to the invasion is not recognized, unlike the United States. Unlike the United States, where a whole popular culture, rather distorted one, grew up around the frontier.
Right.
And the Native Americans, the Indians, and the Little Bighorn, and then, of course, the Great Stand at Wounded Knee. More Australian Aboriginal people died fighting on their frontier than Native Americans died. Many more.
Wow.
And yet, none of that sheer scale of resistance and of what was done to them and the implications for the present are recognized in this country. There is an amnesia and a denial rolled into one. That is, in essence, the reason, that is, in essence, what my film, Utopia, is about. It confronts white Australia, or non-Indigenous Australia, rather, with its own willful ignorance and indifference. People will say, oh, we knew that, but they don't know that. And I suppose it's breaking a silence again, which I believe is the role of documentary making. So that's the film opened in the UK, where all my films begin and are backed, and I've been here seeing it through. It's had the most extraordinary... We decided to try and circumvent the media, knowing they'd be hostile, so we set up hundreds of people's events all across this vast country. We came with hundreds, thousands of DVDs, and they've gone out to some of the most remote places in the world where people have sat around and watched this film. And it's had a very powerful effect. 4,000 people came to the premiere of it here in Sydney, in a part of Sydney that is still partly Indigenous. It will go on to the United States, where it'll be distributed, if you don't mind my saying, by Bullfrog Films.
Not at all.
In Paley, Pennsylvania, who have done a wonderful job with all my films. They'll be distributing it. And I think Americans will find a lot that resonates, particularly First People in America.
Absolutely. Well, John Pilger, keep making those movies and writing those articles and helping us to break the silence and to illuminate these issues. And people can get more information at your website and about your movie and about the other things we've been speaking about. And your website is johnpilger.com?
That's correct.
Okay.
Great, John. Very good speaking to you again, Cindy, and all power to you and everything that you're doing, and especially your endeavors to revolutionize the political system.
Absolutely, John. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. All bye-bye. Our next guest is self-described revolutionary poet Matt Cedillo. He'll tell us a little bit about himself and his work and then walk us out with a poem. Matt Cedillo, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you so much for having me, Cindy.
Well, it's wonderful to get you on my show. I know we met in Los Angeles when you graciously volunteered your services at a fundraiser for my gubernatorial campaign, and I was very moved and inspired by your poetry.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Are you what you would call a slam poet?
I've been playing. I have a slam. Slam is actually a competition. I haven't actually competed in probably two, 3 years. for a team, but I was at one point in time slamming at the national level, and I was actually the Grand Slam champion of a team in 2011, which meant that I won. So, yeah, I guess I still have that, very much have that slam style.
Okay, so, and just tell my listeners a little bit about yourself. You call yourself a revolutionary poet?
Yeah, very much so. I'm very much interested in writing things that are not just, that are part of something bigger than myself, and part of something bigger than poems, and part of bigger than music or speeches or anything, part of a bigger whole, which is to really actually try and change the world we live in. And, I'm pretty good at writing poetry, so that, seems to be one of the little niches I fit into.
That's the kind of poetry I think that, that I resonate with, something that gives you not only something for your ears, but something for your heart and your soul to resonate with. So, I invited you on to perform one of your poems, for my listeners on the soapbox, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. So if you want to, tell my listeners the name of it and why you wrote it, and then go ahead and perform it, and we'll close the show with this performance. And then also tell us your website, Matt.
So my website is mattsediellopoetry.com. That's mattsediellopoetry.com. mattsediellopoetry.com. Sediel is an S. You can contact me there, or you could email me directly, which is fine. My email is mattsediello1981@gmail.com. So anyways, this poem is called Here's a Nation, and I wrote it because a lot of times when there's these terrible incidents, we see these kind of things as somewhat isolated, or we can even see them as like part of historical patterns, but we often don't see them part of the bigger picture that they're really a part of. And so I wrote this poem to kind of address that kind of thinking, as well as to address, you know, how I felt about certain things. And it's called Here's a Nation. So here we go. Here's a nation. Package complete. Police, escort, skinheads, and hooded Klansmen to march hate down public streets while those very same police, quotas to meet, cannon fire on black boys in hoodies and Mexican kids with shaved heads. They are killing our kids. While half the nation applauds in the homeland's defense, because they think that a white woman's purse has more value than a black or brown boy's life. Here's a nation, hellbent, 1%. Genocide pipeline from underfunded schools to overcrowded prisons. They know Gingrich, our kids, ain't fit for nothing but life in and out of the system, stripped of innocence, guilt by birth certificate students, quotas before children, suspects before students, young girls, whores before victims. Here is a nation that eats its young. This is not a democracy. This is not a republic. This is an open-air prison. An industrial-scale plantation, anything and everything you have ever gotten from this system is in mathematical assessments, a calculated equation set to the algorithm, the cost of doing business, keep your hands moving, stomach consuming, mind functioning within narrow confines of your job description, blood-soaked country, forged in genocide, built on slavery by a den of thieves, posing as Messiah, the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson Davis, white Jesus, Western civilization, civilizing mission, accomplished, manifest destiny, American exceptions, peculiar, institutionalized, race and declaration, the plantation, anthem, the slave ship, the bicentennial, you're back to the slave whip at the feet, a lady, liberty, the dirt poor, dead tired, huddled child, labor driven, poppy field, tenements of Ellis Island, Arizona's blood red, coyote trails, the traffic in brown flesh, brick by brick, grave by grave, grave, inch by inch, slave by slave. Here is a nation, there are its chains. Keep you in place, watchtower, overseer, engine killer, union bus, McCarthyism, Patriot Act, acting in interest of national defense. Which of you would stand against it? Which hunt for whistleblown? Who said that? Who did that? Which side are you on? Here is the firing squad that killed Metacomets, that killed Tecumseh, that killed Chimieretto, that killed John Brown, that killed Nat Turner, that killed the Rosenbergs, that killed Sacco and Benzetti, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, that killed Ruben Salazar, that killed Fred Hampton, that was seen to kill in much the same fashion. Here are the blood-soaked fields that claimed the life of Trayvon Martin. Half the nation applauded. Here is that nation. This is not a democracy. This is not a republic. This is the state of the union. They are killing our children. We are at war. And this is a call to action.
Wow, Matt. Thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you for having me.
That's our show for today. As usual, I hope you learned something and were inspired and motivated to look into things further or into action. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, and my connection with Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank Mikey, my associate producer. I'd like to thank Dee Dee Miller, my production assistant. I would like also to thank John Pilger and Matt Cedillo, and you especially for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.